I'm Vermont Edition producer Sam Gail Rosen. This podcast has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. We've just passed the 20th anniversary of the Columbine High School shootings, which led to 12 dead students and a teacher killed. Many others at the school were injured. If you can remember back that far, it was a shocking moment in American history and culture. How could this happen? How could we make sure it never happened again? Of course, it has happened again, many times over. And gun violence is something schools are increasingly aware of and working to prevent. Just last year here in Vermont, a school shooting was potentially averted when police arrested a former Fairhaven student, Jack Sawyer, for allegedly planning an attack on the high school there. The VPR special series Jolted explored the whole event. Here's reporter Liam Elder Connors.
During the interrogation, Jack says he's read several books on the 1999 Columbine Massacre. He says it helped him imagine his own school shooting and suicide at Fairhaven Union.
Okay. So when you read the Columbine book, did you kind of relate to those guys a little bit?
Sawyer told police he had originally planned his attack for April 20th, the anniversary of the Columbine shootings. Sawyer's arrest and the subsequent legislation around gun rights and restrictions brought this conversation home to Vermont in a way that perhaps it hadn't been before. But schools and the students, parents, teachers, and administrators who fill them have to deal with questions about guns, safety, and protocol all the time. We've talked about some of the safety precautions and the drills that schools do in previous episodes of this show, but today we want to focus more on what it feels like to be in a school in an era of heightened security and fear. We're joined now by Jeff Marino, assistant principal at Hartford High School. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And by Kate McCann, a math teacher at U32 High School in Montpelier. She's currently on sabbatical and doing a fellowship in Washington, D.C., where we've reached her. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Thanks.
So you were both in your very first year of teaching in 1999 when Columbine happened. Can you take us back to that time and describe how it felt then to be teaching in a school and to see this happen in Colorado? Jeff?
So I was at South Royalton School. I was 21 years old and really just trying to figure out how to be an adult myself and getting used to the idea of being in charge of, 25 young people. And South Royalton's a K through 12 school, so we had all ages there, and it was pretty rattling to be thrust into that the new reality of having to be keep yourself safe and to be in charge of the young people and to make them feel safe, even though you weren't so sure at that time that we were safe, and my blissful ignorance phase of teaching lasted just, a matter of months, and it's all that I've ever known as a professional. And I certainly look back on my own experience as a student and not having to deal with that stress and that fear. And I wish today's students could enjoy that as well.
Did you say, Jeff, your eyes were open to the new reality? It even felt like that right after the shooting, because you could imagine that for many people it was like, oh, that could never happen here.
Yeah, it was, for me personally anyways. That was on the heels of the Oklahoma City bombing, and it felt like there were things happening in our country that were new. Or maybe I was just coming out of, into adulthood and paying closer attention to being responsible. But the new reality was very quick. At South Royalton, being able to see the I was a middle school science teacher, seeing the kindergarten kids come in and their parents, really struggling to let go of their kids' hands, or the number of kids that didn't even come to school for a few days while families came to grips with what was happening. And then to watching the high school students reflect. And I remember we had an assembly that the students actually put on at South Royalton after Columbine to talk about it as a group and to see what they could do. So it was very real right away for me, not thinking that it would happen this frequently. But I was fearful that this was going to be a new trend.
Kate McCann, what about for you? You too were a new teacher in 1999.
I was a new teacher. I was teaching in Santa Ana, California, and I just remember that being so far removed. Colorado was so far from us, and it wasn't something that the kids really talked about. The teachers talked a little bit about it, but it really didn't change the way we did business. And certainly there were not students in our school putting together assemblies and things like that. It just seemed like an isolated incident at the time.
So for you, unlike for Jeff, this felt like that was there, our school. This is not something that we need to be changing all of our protocols and changing our culture around.
Right.
So when, for you, in your school experiences, did things like active shooter drills, lockdown drills, become routine, something that was expected to do in your school?
Yeah, I don't think for me it really happened until Sandy Hook. By then I was back teaching in Vermont, and so for something to be happening so close to Vermont, relatively, nothing super close to Vermont, but that really changed the way changed our conversations. It started moving us in the direction of, you know, who are we going to allow in the building, and how are we going to let people in, and how are we going to, you know, there's still a lot of controversy around what do you do during those lockdown drills. Are you prepared to fight an intruder? Are you locking your door and staying away from doors and windows still? So there's a lot more conversation, and the staff has been brought into that conversation as well as the students.
Jeff, for you in schools, I mean, you said the new reality, you know, was pretty quick for you, but that doesn't mean that all safety protocols and school protocols changed immediately.
Yeah, compared to now, the protocols were it was really like a stepped situation where we immediately as a staff started talking about it, and I believe we started doing basic lockdown drills the next year. But South Royalton School didn't lock their front doors and use a buzzer system until 2008-2009. And that was a point of contention, you know, conversation, polite conversation for sure, between the board and the staff and the parents about, you know, schools are by design welcoming places and a place that you come, a center of the community, and to start hardening the schools didn't feel right, at least at South Royalton for many years. So it was a number of years after Columbine that the school finally said, we've got to lock the doors, and they reconfigured the office. And that was when it felt like the protocols were pretty intense compared to what we were used to as educators.
Thomas is calling in from Hyde Park. Hi, Thomas.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Well, thanks.
So actually, I have a bit of a kind of a comment, and I don't know if other parents throughout Vermont feel the same, but I'm only 12 years removed from high school, and there was a bit of an uptick when I was in school as to, you know, there was some bomb threats, there was some lockdowns and whatnot, and they were always just something that kind of happened, I guess. But now that I have twins of my own, and they're hitting the three-year-old mark, my wife and I are having a conversation as to whether or not we even want to send our kids to the public school system, whether or not we're going to explore alternatives, just because of everything that we're seeing and hearing, and we're trying to, you know, take it all in and, you know, not, you know, jump the gun or to be too judgmental. But it's a conversation that we've been having, and I'm just curious if other parents are feeling the same throughout Vermont.
And Thomas, for you, the violence that you hear about, mass shootings that you hear about, that has an impact on your thinking on this. I mean, I know it's very different from being a student to being a parent. You feel differently in many ways.
Yeah, I feel I don't know if I want to put that stress on them, that I don't know if I would like for them to grow up thinking that this has to be what it's like, you know, like that this is just the norm now, that you have these lockdowns, you have these practices, these drills, because the chance of something that's happening has risen, I guess. But I also work in the schools as well. I visit all the local high schools in my county for my job, and I see the increases in security, and I appreciate that. But at the same time, I still see how easy it would be. You know, like there's, you know, no matter how much security we have, sometimes I think that I'm just curious if it's enough, and it also saddens me that we have to focus on that as a concern for our students while they're, you know, supposed to be learning and developing into adults to participate in, you know, the world.
Yeah, Thomas, thank you for sharing that. And Thomas has put the call out for other parents. Are you feeling this? And if you're a parent of young children, Thomas says he has three-year-old twins, Is this something that you think about when you start thinking about sending your kids off on the bus to elementary school? You know, one of the things that's so interesting about this, Jeff and Kate, is that, you know, as I was reading and trying to think about the show today, I was reading an extensive article that the New York Times put out recently talking about this fear, but also acknowledging that schools today are actually safer by and large than they were in 1999. And school is one of the safest places an American child can be. But most Americans, according to polls, believe that schools are less safe than they were before Columbine. And I'm curious how you think about that in the sort of context of these active shooter drills and all of this concern, rightful concern, about security precautions. How can we both prepare, be vigilant for, you know, the rare but terrible mass shootings that occupy the minds of so many of us, while also instilling a sense of safety and a good learning environment for our students? Kate?
I think we know that most of these school shootings in the high school setting are taken place by individuals of school age, so children from that school. And the majority of shootings happening in the elementary schools are happening from adults who have entry capabilities into the building. So the way that we address safety has to happen in a couple of different ways. At the elementary school, we can handle that by the cameras and the buzzing in and you know, checking in with the individuals when they walk in, asking them the nature of their business, having them sign in, perhaps even having them escorted by somebody from the front office, making sure that those individuals seem like they have legitimate business inside the school. At the high school level, we are paying more attention to mental health. We know that mental health is impacted by family stress. We know that we're studying adverse childhood experiences, and we know that more and more kids are showing up with more and more trauma. We're trying to figure out why. And we know that we need more counselors, nurses, social workers, psychologists in public education. Proper diagnosis of mental health, mental illness, it starts in our schools. That's where it can be seen and diagnosed early. And increasing funding and access to school-based health centers and their staff is a step in the right direction, I think. We might consider putting the expense on the general fund rather than on education funding. And in the long term, I think we should look more at community schools models, which are more than a place, but rather a set of partnerships between school and community resources.
But what about the fear? I mean, those are all good things that you're doing. Mm-hmm. But what about this fear and this disconnect that we have as Americans, generally speaking, between our understanding of the level of danger and what the level of danger actually is? Because that certainly does contribute both to parental feelings, but also how students feel in their own schools.
Mm-hmm. I think the greatest thing that we can do is talk to students. I know that in the Cleveland schools, for instance, they've done several surveys, large school-wide surveys, and they're asking students, where do you feel safe? Where do you not feel safe on campus? I think it's really important to understand that. Mm-hmm. I got to sit down with a group of students in California during my fellowship and talk to them about, you know, where do you feel safe? Where do you not feel safe? And they didn't feel safe in their school gymnasium. So there are things that can be done to increase their level of, not only their level of safety, but their level of perceived safety.
Yeah.
Just in having the conversation. But those conversations aren't always happening with the students at the school. So that's one thing. As far as parents, I think you could have the same conversations, and you could encourage the conversations between the students and the parents so that that information gets back to the school. You know, what is safe, what isn't safe. If there are hallways in your school that feel particularly unsafe to some students, first of all, we need to find out why. But even before we necessarily dive into the why question, fix it. Put more adults in that area. Shut down that hallway by locking doors. You know, have more more access, teachers having their doors open or walking through there. Ask the staff to help out in some way and make those areas feel safer for students.
Jeff Marino, what do you think? I mean, same as what Kate's saying, what do you think about ways to both feel safe and be safe?
Well, getting back to your point about the article in the New York Times, I agree that schools are safer. And one of the biggest differences that I've noticed is how much more connected everybody is in a school now. You know, my own experience was without cell phones or really much technology at all. And the line between the adults and the students was a little bit thicker and more clear. And what I experience now, and more so, not just recently, but throughout my career as an educator, is that the line has blurred. And in some cases, that's not good. But in the instance of school safety, I think that is a good thing. I think the kids, students are talking to the adults in their schools more. They're talking to them about more things, more personal and private things that help connect them with the resources that they need. I also think that students, you know, this is a positive plug for the devices that they're on so much, is they really know a lot about each other, and they tend to be pretty tuned in when somebody in their orbit is not doing well. And because the lines with the adults are blurred, at least in my experience, we'll have students come to us early on in the downward spiral where we can help before it becomes a crisis. I do think what Kate said about staffing and mental health is right on. That has certainly been our experience in our part of the state. And getting to know the kids really well and plugging the right resources in at the right time is critical. You know, they're young human beings figuring out the world, and it is a very complicated world now. And it comes at them in large chunks very quickly. And that's a lot to process. And I think that leads to the adverse childhood and the trauma. And it all kind of comes together and makes decision-making in the moment difficult. So having the resources in the school, having the school be well-connected with the community, it's critical in terms of how we can continue to make schools safer. It's less about, in my opinion, locking doors and installing cameras and those sorts of things. That'll only help you so much, I think, as the caller Thomas said. You know, it's a building, it's a school, it's a welcoming place. There's always going to be a way in. But knowing your school, your students, and your community, I think, can help us take the next realistic step to achieving a higher degree of safety.
I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're reflecting on 20 years of active shooter drills in America's schools as school shootings continue after Columbine, one that seemed so shocking and out of the norm back then. We're talking about what it's like for school administrators and staff, as well as for students and parents. We've been talking a little bit about the difference between actual risk and perceived risk. We're talking about what it feels like to be in a school today. And also, you know, what does it do to students and to teachers and administrators to have to go through these lockdown drills? We've heard in other articles and media that in some cases it feels really traumatic for students and for teachers. And let's go to Jen, who's calling in from Georgia. Hi, Jen. Hey, Jen. I hear your phone line.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go right ahead.
So in 1999, I was a high school freshman in New Hampshire, and I vividly remember Columbine happening and how upsetting it was for, you know, most of the school. Most of us went home that day and talked about it for many weeks and months thereafter. It felt like the climate in the school had just changed. Now I'm a parent. I have a 2-year-old and a 9-month-old, and I'm looking into homeschooling them when it's time to send them to school for many reasons. But one of the major factors in that decision is that I don't feel comfortable sending them off somewhere, you know, where something like this could happen, especially after Sandy Hook happened, and all those innocent children. And with what happened at the Essex school here that I feel like many people don't remember as a school shooting because students weren't involved. But I lost somebody that I cared about in that shooting, and it's just so prevalent, and it's worrisome as a parent. And lockdown drills, I mean, I don't want my 5-year-old to go through that. I want them to be children and to feel safe wherever they are.
So, Jen, let me ask you, you know, we were just talking earlier about the fact that when you look at the statistics, even in terms of gun violence, American schools are safer now, and they're remarkably safe. But, of course, especially mass shootings, and especially the ones that you touched on, really deeply create fear in people and make this perception that school is not safe. And of course, you can't, you don't know what's going to happen when your children are at school. So I totally understand your fear as a parent. And it sounds like for you, it's also been because of the experiences that you've personally had. So how do you square that idea of trying to protect your children, but also thinking about, you know, what is safe and where are my children going to be safe? And if school is statistically one of the safest places, but I have this fear, how do I balance that as a parent? How do you think about that?
It's definitely a struggle because my husband doesn't feel the same way. To him, you know, statistically, nothing's going to happen to them. You know, 99% most likely they're going to be totally fine. But to me, it's not just the fear that something will happen. Of course, that anxiety is present, but it's also the experience of them going to school, because I remember, you know, being in elementary school and how much I loved it and loved my teacher and loved my classes and loved the other students. And I felt so safe. And we never had to do a lockdown drill, you know, anything beyond just, oh, here's the fire bell. Let's go outside and stand around for a little bit. And we learned how to do that. I don't know how they handle it in schools, but I was talking to a friend this morning who has children in public school, and I mentioned homeschooling to her, and she said, well, if you're going to do that and they go to the school for anything, just make sure you tell them about lockdowns, because, you know, my kids had a friend who was homeschooled, went to the school for an activity. They had a lockdown while he was there, and he was absolutely terrified and thought he was going to die because he didn't know what was going on. And I just don't know that I want them to experience that in an environment where they should inherently just feel comfortable.
Mm. Yeah, Jen, I appreciate you sharing your perspective and your experiences and how they've colored how you think about being a parent sending school-age kids off or not. Thank you for that. So, Kate McCann, you know, listening to what Jen is saying and her experiences, and that Jen was a freshman in high school in 1999, and so her high school experience was really colored by this as well. You know, do you think a new generation of parents has a different perspective on what it's like to have to go through this stuff and thinking about their kids going through it? Then, you know, I was in college and people my age or older than I am in 1999 may have a different thought about what school is.
I have two school-age children myself. I have a freshman at Montpelier High School and a fourth grader at Union Elementary School, both in Montpelier. And the way we look at drills, at least the way I look at drills, is that there's something to be taken. Certainly, we need to take them seriously, but we need to also be reassuring to our students. Jeff mentioned bomb threats, we've had a few of those at U32. In fact, we had a sort of a string of them, and at one point, we needed to check bags of students as they entered the building. And it was, for some students, they were really annoyed, but for others, it was mostly just a minor annoyance, the same sort of thing that we see in folks passing through security at an airport. It's really important to make sure that we take the measures to make sure that people are safe. But as far as, you know, I don't want to discount anything that Jen just shared. It's really important that parents make these informed decisions. I would say for me, it's really important that my kids listen to me. It was important to them. It's important to me that they wear their seatbelt. It's important to me that they stop when I tell them to stop. It's important that they look both ways when they cross the street. We've had a couple instances in parking lots that have scared me to death that they are going to get hit by a car or something like that. So I want them to understand that when an adult speaks to them in a moment that seems very serious, that they listen and that they do what they're told and that they follow the protocols that are in place, because those are the things that are going to keep them safe. So I teach that to my children, and I expect them to listen and pay attention and do what they're told in moments of seriousness. But I don't worry in sending them to school. I let them ride their bikes. It's about a mile to school, and I let them ride home. And I don't worry when I send them to school. Even we had the situation at Montpelier High, I think it was just last year, right, during the school year, where there was a gentleman who had, I think, robbed a bank or something across the street and had come onto the school grounds at Montpelier High, and there were police involved and all of that. But the teachers there did a really great job of keeping kids away from the windows, talking to them, reassuring them that this was going to be okay, making sure that the doors were locked, making sure that those children were safe. And I I applaud the teachers of Vermont, really public school teachers everywhere, for the work that they do to keep kids calm, but also to take those drills super seriously so that we can try and prevent incidents from happening.
Jeff, I'd love your perspective on this, too. I mean, you know, thinking about how students feel going through things like lockdown drills, which in many cases, and I think there are different protocols for different schools, but in many cases, not just students, but often teachers don't know whether it's a drill or a real situation. And, you know, we have a colleague, for example, whose wife is a teacher, and she'll text him and say, I don't know if this is real or not, but, you know, I want to say I love you. And that's traumatic to go through that frequently. So, you know, how do we think about how to do that?
That is a great point. And we try, it seems to be more and more that we are trying to empower the adults, the teachers in the schools to make good choices. That's been the latest shift and the biggest difference that I've noticed in my 20 plus years of being in education, all post Columbine, that at first it was almost like a recipe that we were training teachers on. It was a flow chart that you followed. And in a real emergency, that's not going to be as helpful. Because you're gonna rely on your instincts. You're gonna rely on what you've trained for, and the people that work with us have really empowered us to make good choices. There's always a situation that's gonna fall outside of what the procedures are. You know, what to do if a kid is here, or you're having a field trip, or it's forced kindergarten day. There's so many things in schools now that are intended to make the kids feel safe and feel alive. And I think it was what Jen said. You know, she mentioned how much she loved her school experience, and we want to duplicate that today still. How that impacts the adults, it can be tough. We will have staff meetings down here where we might have to stay after a meeting and speak with people about how comfortable they are with a new protocol, or their ability to deliver it in the way that we need it to be delivered. It's very real. And oftentimes when we train with the Hartford Police, and we're very blessed to have a very supportive and involved police department right in town that is with us every step of the way. But oftentimes they'll want to follow the protocol to a T, which involves not saying this is a drill. And we feel very strongly as an administrative team that we have to say this is a drill, because it can touch off trauma or a really scary response from people. And then, like you said, the example of your colleague, the text messages go flying, and that's not a good thing. So even though we're not supposed to say this is a drill, we will always announce this is a drill, so that people don't have to be in their classrooms fearing for their lives or making, you know, quick decisions about how they're going to protect themselves. That's a real tricky piece is how to manage your own emotions and your own fears when you're thinking about protecting the lives of so many adults and children in your care.
Do your feelings change, Jeff, when you think about it instead of as an assistant principal, you know, where you can sort of put your rational administrator hat on versus as a parent?
Oh my gosh, yes. I mean, just listening to Thomas talk and then Jen talk, I've got three young children of my own, and they're in two different buildings, school buildings in Hartford. And I am constantly projecting my experiences and the attached emotions onto them, because I wish that they didn't have to do lockdown drills. But they don't, it doesn't impact them in the way that I think that it would or should, actually. The staff do such a good job of working with the kids pre, during, and post. And even the police officers, if there is a lockdown drill, they go into each room and have a conversation with each room as they're going through the building to reassure the kids and to talk to them about what's going on and why. And it really has worked. I've certainly been where Thomas and Jen, the two callers, have been as a parent, and you question, you know, is this the right decision? Is this the right move as a parent? And ultimately, I definitely feel safer sending my kids to school than I do when I have them walk down the street to the library, or if we go on vacation somewhere that's unknown, if we go to the movie theater or a shopping mall. I'm saddened that schools have to be added to the list of places that we are fearful when we send our children. And I don't have a good answer for how to make people feel better about that, other than to reiterate what you said. Schools are really safe. And I'll add, the biggest difference is I see kids are kinder to each other. At South Royalton, right away, and I think Jen was touching on that, I think she said the high school kids that experienced that were really disappointed that that had happened. And I think that they realized part of the factors that influenced Columbine were kids being left out or kids being disconnected. And I've seen an immediate shift that has lasted. Kids are kinder to each other. And at least in the high schools and the schools that I've been involved with, they really make an effort to be inclusive and to take care of each other. And that was not necessarily what I experienced. And I'm proud of the kids of today for taking that step. And that has not been in the protocol or in the trainings. They have done that because that's their human nature.
Jen, do you feel like students feel empowered today too? And you know, moving forward, thinking about this in the future, students obviously have to play a role in creating the community they want and feeling safe at school and preventing dangerous situations. So how do we empower students, not just in high school, but, you know, down the line towards kindergarten to feel safe and empowered and like they can have some impact on this situation? Kate?
Sorry, I didn't know that was a question for me. I think student voice couldn't be more important. This is the time. This is the time for students to talk to each other. It's time for communities to talk to each other. It's time for the folks in Parkland to talk to the rest of the United States. And we can do that in small groups. We can do it in larger groups. I think the teacher advisory system that we have at U32 and so many schools in Vermont and elsewhere is really a great place to start. It's an opportunity for students to talk about what's important to them, and then having some representation from those groups to take things to the next level, to the principals, to different staff meetings and the like. To have that conversation at the teacher level, and then and furthermore up the chain, it's important for them to take some ownership over what happens there, and to be alert and to be aware. So it's I'm in the business of building long lasting close personal connections with young people, and that's not going to change. And it's important for me to reach out to them as much as it is, if not more so, for them to feel comfortable reaching out to the adults in the building.
That's Kate McCann, a math teacher at U32 High School in Montpelier, currently on sabbatical on a fellowship in Washington, D.C. Kate McCann, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Jeff Marino is assistant principal at Hartford High School. Jeff, I really appreciate your perspective today as well.
Yeah, thanks for having me.